Let's talk about tweets and take a quiz so we can find out who the smartest one is. What happened this week in Survivor?
Yes, that was the prolific Will from America with the theme to This Week in Survivor. I am your host, Rob Cesternino, back again to talk about everything that's going on here in our eighth episode of Survivor, The Edge of Extinction. And back with me to talk about everything, he is America's favorite Survivor quiz host. Please welcome Mr. Jordan Kalish.
How's it going, Rob?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm great. I know Reem said not to get too excited, but I'm very excited. I think the listeners are excited, and we have another great guest this week.
Okay. You're doing okay despite a sluggish start for the New York Yankees?
I mean, they're 4-4. They're very injured. I feel like, look, the Red Sox are 2-8. We could be 2-8. So it's not terrible. And all these people are going to end up coming back from injury. I'm not overly concerned, like 1.5 weeks into the season.
Okay. All right. So here with us to talk about everything going on in This Week in Survivor is a frequent contributor to the Big Brother live feed updates. She was also our expert talking about Joe Anglim in the preseason. Please welcome back to the podcast, Jenny Autumn. Jenny, how are you?
I am great. Thank you for having me on. And Jordan, at least you're not a Jays fan.
Yes. So I meant to also add also a legend of the wand off as well.
Thank you. I'm proud to be, I don't know, legend, fan favorite, maybe not either of those.
Okay. Definitely Dr. Mike's favorite, which is really the most important thing.
That's all I care about, to be honest.
Yes.
And by the way, the other reason I'm not so concerned about the Yankees, the Blue Jays are in our division, so that's fine. We get to play them.
Okay. Yeah. All right, we're done with the baseball talk for now. Okay. All right. So, of course, that you mentioned Dr. Mike. He was my guest on the feedback show this week. Jenny, did you have a chance to listen to Dr. Mike?
I did, of course. That's always going to be the first thing I go to if I have the chance. I gave it a listen this morning. And you know what? Like, Dr. Mike, we're always expecting Dr. Mike to come with the OTT stuff. And I think that he was really on. He had a lot of really interesting game takes. So it's nice to see Dr. Mike flex his strategy muscle that we all know that he, sometimes forget that he has. And I thought it was a great podcast. I love Dr. Mike.
Yeah, 21 times a month, he flexes his strategy muscle. And I think that maybe because I put him on the feedback show, I think that he is trying to get back to the recap episodes. Maybe that's why he brought so much strategy talk this week.
Yeah, I just think he didn't want to get downgraded to Twitch.
Okay.
I'm downgrade.
That's fine.
I think it's an upgrade. Personally, it's my favorite.
Well, I think that I don't understand the hate for being on the voicemail slot. Like, I think that that's a little bit more fun. You get voicemails. Yeah. You feel like you can maybe relax a little bit, be yourself, and you don't have to, you know, talk too much about certain things. I don't know. I think that the voicemails is very Dr. Mike, and that we need to get rid of the stigma of the voicemails being a negative thing, because I think it's more just like a personality kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The voicemail people are some of my favorite people. So
yes, that survivors. I blame Randy Bailey that he started
Randy,
this, and it's a cult take. It's a cult take. All right, Jenny. Here we are after episode number 8 of The Edge of Extinction, and we saw this split in the Kama tribe this week, where Eric ended up going home. Normally, you know, we would get an exit interview with Eric if this was any other season of the show. Do you feel like that we ever got like a good feel for Eric?
No. And this episode, like, this is, you know, something that everyone is talking about is just the lack of edit from certain people. I understand how complicated it is with, you know, Edge of Extinction, you know, trying to get some visibility from the people on Extinction Island, and also just having, you know, the Kama tribe just slam through the first half of the game and not have to go to any tribals. So obviously it's, you know, very, very like obvious that all of these Kama people have not, you know, had their full show. So I can't fault the editors too much because there's so much that you have to do. But the one thing that really bothered me about this episode is that all of a sudden there was so much commentary about Ron and Eric.
I love commentary.
I love commentary. But everything we had been shown up until this point was Gavin and Eric, mm-hmm. and not Ron and Eric. And so that was what was really puzzling to me, was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Suddenly these two are a power pair, and it became such a really important part of this this vote and,
right.
and the ultimate blind side of Eric. So I think that they maybe could have done a better job of like giving us a little bit more of Eric leading up to this, because it really did seem a little bit out of left field that, you know, he was this power player from comma with Ron. I felt like we'd been given a lot of Ron leading up to it. And
yeah.
so for it to be, the Ron and Eric show, and then Eric's the one that eventually goes, I just felt like it would have made way more sense if it was a Ron boot than an Eric boot. Especially because we had seen so much of Eric and Gavin together as a pair. But you know what? I think maybe it lends itself to, maybe the greater story of Gavin, because Gavin just turned on someone that the audience had led to believe is one of his best allies. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I still didn't feel like I got a ton of Eric, except for him hammering home this loved ones visit thing. Yeah. So
in terms of Ron and Eric, we literally had never seen them on screen at the same time before in the previous 7 hours of this show. And then it turned into, oh, it's Ron and Eric. These guys are going to just run through this entire game if we don't stop them.
And there was multiple people in the episode that referred to them together. And it was just like, what? Like, until that scene where after the vote, when they, they're giving hugs to David and Devins, and they're like, oh my God, thank you for saving me. I'm like, I have never seen these two, like you said, these two people like in the same conversation.
Yes.
It's just like, they're the new daddies for, Devins and David. And suddenly this is a whole new narrative about this tribe. So yeah, I don't know.
So Jenny, the vote this week was very controversial. Did you feel like that the comma people that voted against the big comma kumbaya love tribe, did you think that they made the right move, or was this a hasty move?
Okay, this is, I am the same way as you, as Graham from the Bay called you out on the Dr. Mike voicemails for being a little, like, we're all Libras apparently. And I'm very indecisive too. I've gone back and forth on the, Rob versus Steven debate from Know-It-Alls this week. Because I started off in your, like, feeling the same way you did. And then I kind of understood what Steven was saying. And then I kind of like went back to you. I do think that I definitely agree with you in that players like Gavin and Julia, to a lesser degree, Victoria, but this is all, we're reading their game just from the edit. So this is something we have to keep in mind, is that we think that, certain players have no agency in the game because we're not seeing them talk about anything. So obviously it's all on how it's edited. I was thinking going into this week that Victoria was in a great spot, so maybe this wasn't a necessary move for her. But players like Julia and Gavin, who I feel especially have not been, shown as big players, I do think that for them, why not take the risk and do something that you can say you put your name on, and you being the bottom of, like, they were talking about like eight people. So let's just get to eight. Let's just get to eight. And if you are looking at the other people in that eight and you're seeing so many people that you can see them winning at the end, and you're looking inward and being like, and everyone's the hero of their own story. So if mm-hmm. you're looking at yourself and saying, I can't win against this person, this person, this person, then if you think you can't win in that scenario, why not do something big? And if you're going to lose, if you're going to go out at, 9 or 8 or 7 or 6 anyway, why not try and do something and just see if you
play for all stars?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. I mean, I wouldn't advise people going in and just being like expecting, because everyone plays and then expects that they're going to get called back and mm-hmm. like just realistically, it's just not the case for a majority of the people, obviously. But I kind of see the appeal for, you know, people like Gavin and Julia, and like I said, to a lesser extent, Victoria, in just trying something. There's so many wild cards in this season that I just don't, I can't see the sense in, if you see yourself clearly at the bottom of this alliance, just continuing through that. And you might as well see what sort of luck can shake your way. Mm-hmm. And at least if it blows up in your face, you say that you made a move. So instead of just, because look at the way we talked about like Laurel and Donathan from Ghost yes. Island. And I know that you use that comparison a lot when you were talking about it on Know It Alls, but I really do feel that same way. Like, how many times were we shouting at the TV, you know, to Laurel to make some sort of move. So at least they did something about it. And the only criticism I would say is maybe they did it 1 week too early. But the thing is that they're thinking about, they're picking up numbers. So I think from Julia and Gavin and Victoria's perspective, they're looking at Ron and Eric picking up David and Devin's. They've got Julie in their pocket. And so if they're going to split this down the line, they want the comma people to still be the majority of like the, you know, the faction that they're creating. So I think that they're maybe thinking, I don't know. I think that they maybe could have let a Lauren or a Kelly go and they would have been okay. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is they might've been thinking someone's going to play an idol here. Like I kept thinking like, how is Kelly getting through all of these votes? And I do think that there's a chance that some of these comma people are now thinking like, she would have played her idol by now. Mm-hmm. Like, so maybe they're thinking like, let's just put some votes on her and try and get her to flush the idol. And then we can get her the next week. And I feel like on the preview, we see Victoria mention, I think we see Victoria mention Kelly's name. So I do think that maybe she thought like, let's just take the shot and then we can get them out next week and dwindle down those numbers that we just used on this vote. Hard okay. to say, but I think I liked it. I liked it from a viewer perspective. It's impossible.
We were the winners.
Yes. I'm so glad that I, you know, got an interesting episode to talk about. I really can't fault them for making the move they made because really, how can you possibly know?
Okay. Like, so you brought up a lot of interesting parts of this and you brought back Laurel from last season. I actually got a lot of voicemail about Laurel in particular this week, and I didn't get to it with Dr. Mike, but I actually want to play one of the voicemails that we got for the feedback show. This is from one of our listeners, Miles.
Hey, Robin, Dr. Mike, this is Miles from Philly. Back in Ghost Island, we complained that Laurel and Donathan never made a move. Now in this season, we've been given the complete opposite of that with Julia and Gavin, and we're now complaining they made a move too early. My question is, what does a contestant in their position have to do to please the superfans? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah, I got a lot of voicemails like this that was kind of looking at this from Laurel's perspective of like, what do you have to do to make you people happy?
Yes. No, and it's so true. People are going to be complaining or criticizing you no matter what. So,
and Steven was like maybe behind Brent Wolgamott, like people that were killing Laurel of like, how could you not make a move? And now here are people who, you know, making a move and, you know, better too early than too late.
And I just think that like it's people are always going to they're going to grill you no matter what. They're going to say you flipped too early. They're going to say you waited too long. It's you know what? Just do what feels good to you in that moment. We're always going to be able to go back and say like, oh, you should have done this. You should have done that. It's ultimately all just speculation anyway. And I really think that, you know, we saw that Victoria was, she even said, I think it's a vote too soon. And mm-hmm. maybe she was right. But I also think that she's a very strong player. Like she knows what she's doing. And I think that she, for whatever reason, she probably decided that it was a good reason. Like there was a good reason to do it now. And they're relying on the fact that the Lesu people are a mess. And so they don't have to worry about taking out one of their own numbers again, and that backfiring because they're, you know, there's so like they're just such a mess between the, you know, the five of them. And I don't know. I like people are never going to be happy, and people are always going to be, you know, saying that, you know, you should have done this, you should have done that. So, you know, the super fans are always going to be pissed off.
Right. And that's from the perspective of the players watching the show. But I really do believe that Laurel and, you know, her plight in Ghost Island and being set up as sort of the person to blame for why couldn't anybody stop Dominic and Wendell when it was so obvious that these two guys were working together and they were going to get to the end. From the perspective of the players, I really do think they had just finished watching that season at Ghost Island. The finale aired, I don't know, like 2 or 3 days before they left to go play the season. So I think it was very much front of mind. And I do think that Laurel may end up being the most impactful player for these next couple of seasons, because I think that we are going to see more and more players going ahead and taking the shot if they have the opportunity, so that they don't get branded as, oh, you were the person that ruined the season because you didn't make a move. So I think people are going to have an itchy trigger finger for making these moves more and more, which I do think that in the end, that's what production wanted. And I think by sort of like hanging Laurel out to dry in Ghost Island, I think they kind of got this moving forward.
And look at how it went for Donathan. Like Donathan tried to do something and it was too late. There was, the numbers were gone. So I think that, you know, people that are playing in the season might be looking back on that season, having that be the last one that they'd seen in the entirety, and thought like, okay, Laurel and Donathan were in a position where they should have made a move sooner. And Laurel never made the move. And she literally, you know, ended up having to be like a third place tiebreaker. And when Donathan tried, you know, to stand up to anyone, look what happened to him. So you really have to make that
see a money when
you, yeah, well, I mean, if that's what you're playing for, then that's what you're playing for. But you know, it's with the whole Edge of Extinction twist, like I'm sure that people are probably just like, you know what, I just feel like you know, Eric is someone that might win an immunity and we can't give him too many, like too much power and let him pull in David and Devin's even more. Let's blow this shit up and see what happens. So I don't know. I can't fault them too much. It's impossible to know. So I like it. I like it from a, you know, a viewer standpoint, and we'll see what happens. It looks like the next week is going to be absolute chaos. And
yeah,
like I'd rather that anyway.
Yeah. To me, if they have a plan, if the three people who flipped on Kama have a plan going forward and they have like a next move, we want to do now that we took out Eric, we want to do this either with the War Dog, Kelly and Lauren side, or maybe they're going to try to pull in Devins and David. I think we could look at this as a good move. My first reaction was to think it's a little bit too early. There's still 12 people left in the game. They're really putting themselves out in front now where they maybe come off as bigger threats than they were before this, because now they've made a pretty big power move. But if they have an idea of what they're going to do next, to me, this could turn into a very good move, and maybe they're able to, you know, get to the end instead of some of the other commas, or instead of people who were on the Lesu / Manu side.
Okay. And if you're going to screw over your allies, then I think final 12 is a fine time to do it, rather than, you know, final 7, final 6, when you're that much closer to the end and they are all the more likely to be extra salty with you when you get to the final tribal council. A lot can change between the final 12 and the final 3.
Yeah. And do you think voting out Eric was potentially a result of the Edge of Extinction twist, where you now put another strong challenge competitor on Extinction Island with Joe?
I mean, I wouldn't have thought that, but Julia has said on Twitter that that is a factor in terms of how they were looking at these votes of who can beat Joe on the Edge of Extinction. So it sounds like that it was a factor.
Well, that's the other thing, is if you're trying to, you know, if you're not going to get rid of, you know, the two returnees left in the game, but you want to weaken them, then I guess it makes sense if you're going to send someone that might give Joe a run for his money, because when Joe comes back, you know, he's not going to work with you. So, I mean, it makes sense from that standpoint. And if Eric comes back, then what is he going to do? Like, who does he have left? So, I think it makes sense from that standpoint too, because the episode when I was watching it, I was like, they should take it Ron. And then when Gavin suggested it, I was like, yeah, take it Ron. But when you frame it from the, you know, the standpoint of putting someone strong at Extinction Island, like, that absolutely makes sense.
Okay. Let's talk about the Edge of Extinction, because I haven't talked about it too much this week. We got to see how Joe Anglim was fitting in on the Edge of Extinction. Jenny, you covered Joe for us in the preseason. What do you think about Joe on Extinction?
It broke my heart at first. Mm-hmm. I'm really wondering how your mom was feeling seeing Joe cry. He looked really disheveled, like his mustache wasn't twisted up. That's how you know, like, he's going through some rough times.
Yeah.
I actually watched a secret scene of him from Extinction Island, and he makes this really good point about how the longer that he gets to be there, the more time that he gets to spend with people that are going to, you know, the fact that everyone that's still on Extinction Island is on the jury now is really important for someone like Joe, who thinks that he has a really good shot to get back into the game, because he gets to spend all of this time. I'm pretty sure that anyone who has played with Joe has not had a bad thing to say about him. Like, we just heard Abby Maria.
What about Steven?
Well, no, Steven loves him. You've heard Steven talk about how he feels about Joe. He even said early in the season that Joe is a threat to win because Joe is liked. Mm-hmm. And we just heard Abby Maria, like, who famously called him a clown.
You're moldy.
Moldy. Like, she had nothing but great things to say about Joe as well. So I really do think that it's an underreported fact that Joe is a likable person and gets along with people. And the more time that he has to spend with people who are getting voted out by, you know, people that things that he had nothing to do with, you know, these people that are going to follow him onto Extinction Island, he talks about how he can almost poison them against whoever is going to be left.
Oh, they got you too, man. Well, yeah. Man, these guys are ruthless.
And it's not the worst point that he's making. Like, he gets to hang out at Extinction Island and, you know, be chill Zen Joe and make connections with people out there. You know, he might not be catching as much fish as, like, an Aussie, as we've discussed, but I think that it makes a lot of sense for him to be there. And he points out that the rest of the players that voted him out probably weren't thinking of this fact, that maybe they were sending him too early because they're giving him time to, you know, to work.
Yeah.
And I think his social game is, I mean, I talked about this when we chatted pregame about Joe. His social game, I think, is just always overlooked, because he's so obviously like a challenge threat. And, you know, he's got no challenges to compete in right now. So this is the time where he gets to create bonds with the people on the jury and perhaps have some influence that could help him if he does get back in the game.
Now, just to bring it back to Abby Maria, my big regret from my interview with Abby Maria, which I thought was a lot of fun, was that I did not remember to talk to Abby Maria about her relationship with Sierra Dawn Thomas, her partner on reality star Fear Factor. And I wondered if maybe she had some insight into Joe Anglim, because that she and Sierra were now friends.
Well, she did mention, like, he seems like a very good boyfriend.
Yes.
To Sierra. And, like, it's true. Like, as someone that follows Joe on Instagram, like, he does seem like a very, like, loving partner. He's doing it for Sierra. Yeah, I don't know. I think that the fact that the way that Abby Maria spoke about Joe, like, that spoke volumes to me, because, like, that's like, Abby had some pretty harsh things to say about Joe, and she still thinks he's a great guy. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think that Joe is in the worst position right now.
Okay. So over on the Edge of Extinction, somehow that Chris Underwood has always become like the de facto UPS person, where he's just delivering whatever production needs to get to the other
delivering
players.
Packages.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but
well, you invited me on the podcast, Rob. What else am I here for? So
and so he shows up with messages in a bottle, and For some of the contestants, this was an exciting prospect, but for one contestant, this seemed like that this was a bit of a bother.
Honestly, I'm terrible with riddles. I'm even worse with maps. I mean, I was ready to take a nap. I was like, damn it.
That is a mood right there.
Dude, like, I was about to take a nap, and then they give us a map for find stuff, and I'm like, bro, God.
I don't even like these riddles. I don't know how to solve a puzzle. I'm tired, dude.
Yeah. Now, Reem, she tells us she's not good with riddles or maps, but nothing prepared us for Reem's powers of deduction.
It's been rocky thus far, but your game's still at stake. Is there a steak somewhere near the rocks?
do you think hungry. She meant like a steak in the ground, or like a steak that you could eat?
No, I think she definitely meant like a T-bone.
T-bone steak, wow, like a T-bird.
What? What kind of cut is it? I'm hungry. I want to take a nap.
Yeah.
Who's going to cook this steak?
It's been rocky so far. Your game is at stake. Maybe it means that there's a steak near the rocks.
Wait, the steak is on the coals. It's being cooked over the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Amazing. They didn't get the Outback reward. So perhaps that they were sending it to the edge of extinction.
Yeah. And like Eric, who was sent to the edge of extinction, he showed up and he seemed happy to be there. And Reem quickly cured him of that as well.
Hey, this is better than I thought it would be.
Dude, don't get excited.
I very much feel like Reem is like one of those people. It's like, if I'm not happy, none of you are going to be happy. Like, let's not get too excited.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to spend a day with me and I'm going to poison you.
Dude, there's no steak. There's nothing by the rocks. Don't get excited. There's nothing to be excited about. Been here for 4 weeks. There's riddles. Joe doesn't catch any fish, bro. It's not good. Maybe Chris Underwood will like hand you a bottle right when you're about to take a nap.
There's nothing in the bottle. There's nothing to drink.
I thought they were getting wine at first. I didn't realize that there was a message in the bottle. I thought they were just giving them wine and maybe one of them would have a message.
Dude, honestly, I wish they would give us wine in a bottle instead of another freaking map.
Well, red wine goes with steak, right? That's a thing?
Yes.
Delicious.
Yeah. Okay. I want to touch on War Dog a little bit. Jenny, you have any feelings on War Dog?
Love him on the show. What is he doing on social media? I mean, he surprises me every week because I go in thinking like, this guy is a hot mess. Like he's just, you know, ticking time bomb. But I'm basing all of this on how he seems on social media. But I mean, I have to hand it to him. Like he's doing a pretty good job. And even in that conversation with him and Devins, which was so freaking hilarious, like he came out of that looking like the sane person, which is like, if you had told me 2 weeks ago that there was going to be a conversation between Rick Devins and the War Dog, and the War Dog was going to be the one that came out looking like a rational, like sane human being, and that Rick Devins was going to look like a, you know, extremely emotional, like, you know, loose cannon. Like I would have been like, okay, you know,
I get it.
But that is really how I felt about it.
Can I play that conversation?
I loved it. Yeah. It was incredible.
Okay.
Five old Lesu got together.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm dying to get back with the old Lesu.
Just like, I'm dying.
Yeah, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. Would love to get to back great. Together with you guys.
Look, now that I can trust you guys, I really want to get back with you all.
You
don't want to get back with you guys at all. Why would I work with you guys?
Well, I mean,
you guys stabbed me in the back over and over again. Well, I don't want to work with Kelly at all. She's trying to vote me out twice. Like,
I mean, you come here for ninth or eighth, then that's fine.
Yo, he hit him with the knot. Yeah, I really want to work with you.
Yeah.
Not.
I think it's clear that that Devin strategically was not making the best move here. Like, obviously, if someone's saying I want to work with you on Survivor, you say yes, even if it's not the truth. And Wardog didn't do a great job of reading that situation. But then he has the conversation where he completely like flips it with Julia and Gavin. And at least the editing is leading us to believe that he was the one who woke them up to the fact that the other commas were trying to use Devin's and David as pawns. And if that's the case, if they made that move because of what Wardog did, I don't know if I'm allowed to give a Kalishi, but Wardog was definitely the best player in that episode.
Okay. All right.
I did love the editing of the, Wardog having the same conversation with two different people. It was very similar to the Aubrey, like, you know, I see myself in you kind of edit from earlier in the game. So that was enjoyable seeing him have the same pitch with Gavin and Julia simultaneously.
So when Wardog was getting frustrated with Rick Devins, he said something at the end of the conversation, which just really made me laugh when I listened back to it. So this is Wardog getting frustrated with Rick Devins.
You keep saying I'm playing with emotions.
You are playing with emotions.
No, that's
Rick Devins.
I love that too. Rick Devins.
You are playing with emotion right now. Rick Devins.
Like, that's how you know you got in trouble. He used your full name. Like, damn. Yeah. And the Wardog just played you.
That was a poorly worded question, Jordan Kalish.
You know what reminded me of when I was watching the episode? It reminded me of You Know Nothing, Jon Snow.
Honestly, why is Rick so salty? He was talking about how, like, you guys stabbed me in the back over and over and over again. Like, what? 1 week? Like, what was the over and over again? Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
They did vote him out once. I mean, that's usually enough to, then they tried to vote him out again.
That tribal was like the love fest. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, and the reason that they took away from that tribal where Rick gets voted out when they were down to five.
Mm-hmm.
That he was so liked, that he's such a likable person. And so it's like, isn't that a compliment? I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. It did seem, I did not expect that from Devins at all. Like, he got some salt in the Kool-Aid mix for sure.
Well,
made it with salt instead of sugar.
You know, Wardog said this in the episode, Jenny.
The final seven ain't gonna be the seven of you.
You know, we gotta like go out there, try to find cracks. You can't just say, oops, I tried, it didn't work.
Now, is it possible that Wardog was actually talking about Rick Devins, who is his ops?
Wow, I never, oops.
Is that how Wardog pronounces that?
I never even considered that. I thought that he was, so I'm pretty sure, where is Wardog from? Because I'm pretty sure ope is like a Midwest thing.
He's definitely not from the Midwest. I think he's an East Coast guy, and he lives on the West Coast. But he definitely, I don't think, is a Midwest guy.
He spent some time with like some, because he
is he a millennial
guy? I don't know. Honestly, he's one of those people where like you could tell me he's like 48, or you could tell me that he's like 29, and I'd be like, okay, like I have no idea how old this person is.
Oops. Look, when it comes to where Wardog is from, I'm the expert here, being that that he is from the town that I lived in for a couple of years, and I can guarantee I've never heard oops before.
Well, and I don't think it's oops, it's ope. Like, when so Midwestern people, you can back me up here. I'm pretty sure it's like, oh, if you're trying to like get past someone, you're like, oh, just trying to get past you. And oops. So maybe he picked that up from someone. Wasn't he in the military? So maybe he was like with a bunch of like Midwestern people and he just like picked it up. I don't know. But that was the first thing I thought of when I heard of it, was I was like, it's the pluralized ope, but I don't know.
When he was in the military, was he special ops?
Special ops.
You better be careful right now, Rick Devins. You and I are about to be opes, and we're gonna have some smoke, Rick Devins.
All right, and then Rick Devins was not only salty with Wardog this week, he was salty with David Wright, who came to him to have a conversation, and that there was a conversation about who might be intoxicated.
One of us is drunk right now, and I don't know which one. I think I'm the sober one.
And Rick Devin says, it is definitely not him.
But my way is better for me.
You're not hitting numbers, bro.
I think you're dreaming. I think you're getting played.
I love is he trying to do his Russell impression?
You were dreaming. You were getting played.
Is it possible that when you go to the edge of extinction, Reem just rubs off on you? Because like that's Reem is someone who's known for saying exactly what she's thinking. And again, it isn't an issue to have these thoughts on Survivor that you might want to turn on someone that you used to be working with. But Reem is someone, she's not going to sugarcoat anything. And now that we have Devin's back in the game from the edge of extinction, maybe he took some of Reem with him.
No, I was actually going to make the same point. And I think that we saw Aubrey posted something on social media, I think, about like the bros rubbing off on her. And then like one of the like Reem is someone who's really rubbing off on her. But I honestly think that the edge of extinction is like probably like this toxic place where like I was saying earlier, like if I'm not happy, you're not going to be happy. And it really does seem that like Rick Devins came back from the edge and he is salty, and he does not like if you play him, like you're dead to me, like Abby Maria style. So
screw you dude,
and yeah, screw you all you dudes. So I don't know, I agree with Jordan here. I think that he might be picking up some of that Reem Daily saltiness and taking it back into the game with him.
The only way to win the edge of extinction is to raise the mast and get the hell out of there before it breaks you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's why, like, if Joe has the, like, the, you know, like, mental fortitude to, like, you know, take this toxic environment and use it to poison everyone else and build himself up, like, that really could be a powerful thing if he gets back in the game, because people are miserable on the edge of extinction.
And we were saying Rick's best attribute was probably his social game. Like he seemed, you know, before he got swapped into a pretty bad situation, he was getting, you know, he had so many connections on his tribe. He was someone that we thought when he got into the merge would have such a strong social game and he'd maybe be able to make connections with the other side. And now potentially, you know, War Dog is really the one, you know, with Gavin and Julia making connections with the other side and flipping the game. And I've always thought that the social game and strategic game were really one and the same, because if you don't have those social bonds, it's very hard to strategize with anybody. And I think, you know, I don't think that Rick's game is lost. I think he could get back to the point where maybe he's able to get back in with David. But, you know, David had a confessional in this episode where he said he needs to find another route to the end of the game. And I think this could be pretty big trouble for Devins.
Okay.
I just think that he's relying on like riding with these comma people to the end and being like the sole, you know, like less you person at the end. But if he's pissed off all of these people on the jury by, you know, turning on them, I don't know if he's going to be getting their votes. So, and I don't think he's going to be getting there at this point.
Jenny, it was also a breakout week for Aurora, as Abby Maria says.
I love that.
And what did you think of the first time during the season that we are seeing a lot from Aurora?
You know what? I actually really like her. Going into the season, I didn't know how I was going to feel about her. And, you know, we've gotten to see so little of her until this episode. I really liked it. She got burned in that last vote. And we see her at the beginning of the episode being like, well, everything that I'm hearing and seeing now is telling me that I'm not safe. And, you know, like if I need to fake that I'm, you know, I'm okay with how they burn me, then I'll do that. But like, I'm not going to trust these people again, but I will go with the number. So like she perfectly, you know, like she's emotionally driven now because she's like, well, you guys just blindsided me and you're trying to tell me, you know, that it doesn't mean anything. She's smart enough to know that that's bull, but she's also not acting. She's not pulling a Rick Devins and just being like, I refuse to work with you. She's acknowledging that if that's where the numbers are right now, and that's what's going to keep her safe for now, she'll play along. So I really liked her this week. You know, even through the whole thing during the immunity challenge, I don't think that was a terrible look with her trying to negotiate with Victoria during the immunity challenge. I really liked Aurora. She's been a huge surprise for me.
Yeah, I think she's also kind of biting in confessional. And I think that that's hard to put into the episode when that person is not sort of in the underdog position. And I guess she kind of was as sort of like in the minority, but she was with Joe and Aubrey. So I think that the show probably wanted to give us the Joe and Aubrey perspective on things. But now it's sort of like being left out of the Joe vote. And we saw a lot of her, and I think she has like a lot of fiery things to say. So happy to have Aurora join us as part of the cast of The Edge of Extinction this week.
Yeah, and the one thing I noticed from the immunity challenge was like when I rewatched the episode. So like Julie obviously got upset that after Lauren fainted that Aurora started negotiating, but like right after Lauren fell, Julie actually goes like, because Victoria's like, "What happened?" And Julie's just like, Lauren fainted, just keep going. So Julie is actually the one that's like, keep going, don't pay no mind. And then as soon as Aurora is starting to negotiate with Victoria, like if anything, Aurora's trying to end this challenge sooner. Like, you could frame that as like, okay, well, this is a pretty alarming situation. Like, let's get this over with. Like, let's just figure out who's going to win this challenge and be done with it and like move on. So I don't know. I just thought it was kind of interesting that Julie was the one saying like, just keep going. But like part of just keep going is, you know, sometimes you negotiate during a challenge, you know, when you get down to two, who's going to take it. So I didn't love that. Like I felt like people were pretty hard on Aurora there. So,
And, you know, for Aurora, I think makes all the sense in the world to end up flipping against the comma group here in this vote after she was left out of the last one. I wish the episode would have given us a little more perspective in terms of where her head was at and who was talking to her, because we saw her like perspective of, OK, I've got the extra vote and OK, I won immunity and I'm going into tribal and I'm safe. But we didn't see who was really talking to her after that immunity challenge. So we don't know if the comma people reached out to her and then Julia and Gavin and or Victoria mended fences with her and then she's back aligned with comma, or we don't know if it's the people from the old Lesu, like Kelly and or David or War Dog or anybody who reached out and then got her back as part of that group. So we just don't know where she stands.
Yeah, we've really not seen her talking one-on-one with like anyone except for Ron. I've kind of created this narrative where I feel like Victoria is kind of picking her up. And, you know, maybe part of the reason why Victoria decided that it was worthwhile to make this move right now is that she picks up Aurora because, you know, like bringing in Aurora on this vote and, you know, including her on something after she's been left out of something might be good for her. I can see Victoria looking at like Ron and Eric and being like, if I get to the end with these guys, I'm not winning against them, but maybe I can win in, you know, a final three with a Julia and an Aurora. And so maybe she's just trying to like set herself up there. I know I realize I'm looking at everything from like the lens of Victoria, just because I'm really rooting for her.
You're not the only one. You're not the only one.
I know. Yeah. Like join the bandwagon.
Okay. All right. Jenny, anything else? You want to touch on from the episode before we start to get into the week in Survivor social media?
No, I think we've gone through everything that I was really interested in from this episode. So,
okay, Jordan, you're good.
Yeah, my thing with the Survivor challenge is you play to the whistle. If the challenge isn't over, you could do whatever you need to do. There's a whole team of doctors taking a look at Lauren. There's really nothing that you could do except for try to win the challenge. So,
exactly.
Really, like. The criticism of Aurora, I thought, was way over the line.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, what are they going to be able to do? And what is them, you know, talking between them really going to harm in that situation? The only thing I really wanted to mention was, like, Chinese food is a crap reward.
Yeah, like, I saw you tweeted that. So you don't care for it. Jordan, do you like the Chinese food reward?
You know what? I watched the episode again and I didn't see any rice with it. So you did make a point that you really want Chinese food because you're just getting some more rice. It looked like they had more like chicken and beef and lo mein or whatever it was. I think it's a fine reward. I don't have a problem with it. And like Brett LaBelle would say, it definitely looks better than Fijian pizza.
Okay.
I'm just like, to me, yeah, I had the same thought when I watched the episode. I was like, oh, more rice? And what did, like, the chickens that Wendy rescued, did they, like, cook them? And, like, they're
yeah, we haven't seen the chickens in a while. We haven't seen them in a couple episodes. I think they were the Chinese food.
Lauren was like, I wish a chicken would walk up. And I'm like, well, they took it to make it into the Chinese food.
Yeah, so. Well, Wendy did say that, okay, well, look, I'm just trying to save you because then tomorrow you'll be fried rice. She said that.
Yeah, see? She knew.
She knew. So Wendy was onto something. All right. Before we get to the week in Survivor social media, let me take a moment and thank one of our sponsors. And those are our friends over at the Hunt a Killer subscription box. Now, Jordan, you're a fan of the escape rooms, right?
Yeah, they're a lot of fun.
Lots of fun, but also very expensive, time consuming.
You need a big leave. You have to leave your house.
You need a big group. You got to make a reservation. Well, you can forget about all of that hassle. That's Ops, because with the Hunt a Killer subscription box, you can be having all the fun of playing in an escape room, but from the comfort of your own home. I love comfort. The Hunt a Killer is a monthly subscription game where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. And each month, you get the crime scene photos, evidence, motive, and suspect information that you need to solve a crime. It's interactive.
That's Drip, right?
Well, yeah, yes, yes. It's interactive and convincing, so much that it looks and feels real, from the newspaper clippings to the clothing left at the crime scenes. I've gotten to play the Hunt a Killer subscription box. They send you all of the props, all of the clues. There's even a pocket watch that could be a convincing hidden immunity idol if you ever needed to do it. It doesn't break in half like David Wright and Rick Devin's immunity idol, but it's very convincing. It's not just papers, but there are file folders, there are different props, and you are going to go online to investigate the crime scene and look for a killer, just like you're a part of the crime scene investigators that Keeve and I talked about recently. Over.
Yeah, Rob, what's easier to solve, the Hunt a Killer box or the CSI?
I'll tell you, Hunt a Killer is a lot more fun. Let me tell you that right now. Hunt a Killer is perfect to play solo during date night or with friends for a game night, so you can swap theories. You can even join their online community as well. Over 60,000 people have joined the Hunt a Killer online community, and they have over 1,000 five-star customer reviews. So go ahead right now. Our listeners can go to huntakiller.com/Rob for 20% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day. So hurry up and take advantage of this offer. That's at huntakiller.com/Rob for 20% off your first box at huntakiller.com/Rob. See if you have what it takes to get inside the mind of a serial killer and solve the mystery. And now with that, let's talk about what's going on over on social media with all of these survivors.
Tweets, baby, tweets. They're not just your eyebrows. If tweets were facial features, they would be Ron Clark's eyebrows. Tweets.
There you go. All right.
Wow. Like it.
All right. Thank you there to Jacob Seeger Weinstein for that. Okay.
Killing it.
Okay.
He's verified on Twitter.
Yeah.
How? Wow. I need to find that out.
Just from doing the Twitch jingles.
Yeah.
That Jacob does a lot more than just the Twitch jingles. And you can follow him on Twitter at Jacob SW. He's got a girl in his Twitter profile header. Cartoon could be Victoria.
I can't see it. Maybe, but okay.
I think it looks more. It's more like Wendy. It's like purplish hair.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about what's going on. War Dog. I am the War Dog. Now, he's really mixing it up on social media. I feel like that's so. Social media is coming around to the War Dog, Jenny.
The tides have turned, and hasn't he like unblocked a bunch of people, and so now he's like, he's a good cop again. So
yeah, I felt like that he was sort of the villain of social media, and now he's becoming the anti-hero of social media.
I'm here for it. That's okay. Fine. I'm warming back up to the War Dog. So
yeah, he says here, one of the remaining cast members never STFU about it, doing endless countdowns to which family visit might be. It drove me insane.
It would drive me insane too. Honestly, rewatching the episode and seeing all these scenes where Ron and Eric are like, I'm using the family visit to, you know, like keep people loyal, and it's so genius. And I'm like, if anything, that's just annoying the hell out of everyone. And like, you can see it on everyone's face. So that does not surprise me.
Yeah.
Family visits like code for final eight, which is really, is that really anyone's goal on Survivor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was funny when War Dog was talking about that, and David Wright wanted to echo what he was saying. He's like, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I have to agree with the War Dog here. That was fun. Okay. Eric, the Eric Hafeman said, all I'm saying is I really trusted Gavin out there. I didn't see that coming. He knows exactly how I feel about him. Jenny, is this that, okay, he knows, that guy knows I love him, or that guy knows I hate his guts?
You know what? Eric doesn't strike me as the, you know, the spiteful kind. He's a family guy. He's a little bit more mature. I think that this means, like, you know what?
Historically, those are the most bitter people.
Oh, sure.
It's like, hey, you took the money out of my kid's mouth.
Yeah, true. I don't know. The interaction between the two of them reads to me like it's all good. I'm sure that they talked it through at the end. It's really hard to read these interactions between the survivors that are still in the game, because it's like you're trying to figure out, you know, how it all ends up. It does get a little spoilery to me. But when I saw that tweet, I read it as like, you know how I feel, like we're okay, buddy. But like, I'm sure that they had a conversation where he was like, yo, like you really screwed me. I thought you were my boy, but mm-hmm.
Yeah, a real Cochran, you screwed me over.
Yeah.
Gavin, you screwed me over.
Yes.
Those gingers, man. Yes.
Gavin, you screwed me over.
As if you had that.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Gavin, you screwed me over. Me out of a million. When I see you in a dark alley, I'll kick your ass.
See, that's what would be frowned upon now. That would be.
Can I cover that for a wand off? Is the question. is that a consideration? Yeah.
CBS put that out as a Ponderosa video. I don't think they would do that.
This leads me back to, you know, what I just said about, like, you know, the gingers. Was Lauren Rimmer onto something? Like, you can't trust these ginger. Look at two of the people that flipped on Comma this week, Victoria and Gavin, the two gingers of the season.
Oh, so you count Gavin as a redhead?
Okay, he's kind of a ginger. Like, he's not, he's like a little bit more of like the sandy brown ginger. Mm-hmm. But I think that he's got, he maybe isn't like a full blown ginger, but he's definitely got like a little bit of the, you know, the ginger flavoring in him.
Hmm. I didn't even think about that.
Oh yeah. I think, am I alone on this?
And I don't think I'm a ginger. Maybe my beard is a little reddish, but I wouldn't consider a ginger. And I think Gavin is less ginger than me.
I'm Irish. I can spot a ginger when I see one. I think that there is ginger influence in the DNA of Gavin Whitson. That's all I'm saying. Okay. So he's got that reddish hair. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? If he makes it to the family visit, maybe we'll be able to see it. Maybe we'll see who would come. So I don't think we're going to find that out.
Okay. All right. Then let's talk about some of the other tweets from this week. Oh, we had some smoke between Ron Clark and Julia after this vote on Twitter. And not the first time we're seeing members of this cast get into it a little bit. So Ron Clark tweeted to @TheJuliaCarter. He says, you were swayed by @IamITheWarDog. Let that sink in. Wow. Shade. So that's double shade.
Yeah, he's shading the War Dog and Julia at the same time, being like, of all people, you got swayed by the War Dog. But that sounds salty to me. Like, it's just like, you got played and you're trying to, you know, justify it that, you know, it was embarrassing that she got swayed by this person.
Ron Clark felt like,
but my way is better for me.
You're not getting numbers, bro.
I think you're dreaming. I think you're getting played.
Julia, you got played.
I think you're getting played. Puppet Master got played, Julia responded. And then Ron Clark said, blindsided by a dumb move, you aligned yourself with the mafia. Jordan, now you play a lot of mafia. Is that War Dog is mafia?
I think that if War Dog played mafia, there would be a lot of heat on him to start the game. I think people would always be suspicious that he'd be in the mafia, but this, it's such a random game where you can't just assume that anyone's either mafia or not mafia, unless you're like Michael J. Clark and then you're always mafia.
Okay.
Former Twitch contestant. Michael J. Clark.
Yes. Okay.
I know him.
Yes. Julia then responded to, Ron saying that you align yourself with the mafia. She says, pot calling the kettle black.
I mean, so she's insinuating that, oops, you're the mafia.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like Ron Clark is always like slightly coming off a little bit like cult leaderish to me with this whole like comma strong stuff. So, I mean, I don't think I kind of see where Julia's coming from being like, well, you know what? I got out of this brainwashed cult thing, the comma cult. And if I'm playing with the mafia, then so be it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is from a couple days ago that Malcolm had said, I will defend, stand up for, and fight for the brilliance of Survivor until the day I die. But holy hell, there are 7 brilliant, entertaining people playing their asses off on the island right now, and I can't remember their names because I'm forced to remember 743 twists, all of whom's personalities are solely based on the opinions of Joe, David, and Wentworth. And Rick Devins responded, are you just upset because we voted you out on the last episode?
I enjoyed that.
A great callback to when the cast was announced that Malcolm had tweeted like, hey, for everybody that's tweeting me, I am not on the upcoming season of Survivor.
That's
not
Joe.
Me.
Yeah. Now this is great. This is a great tweet. And I know I was a little bit hard on Devins's game in this episode here, but he still remains, I think, one of the funniest people on his cast. And I love that joke that he made during the challenge where he said now the five fittest people are out.
Here.
And he's been great.
I've already lost 4 of the fittest people in this game. Devins, a sudden 5 of the fittest now.
He's so quick. The only criticism I have of that reply to Malcolm is that he technically wasn't one of the ones that voted out Joe, but still, like, it's still a solid joke.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, can you explain also, were Malcolm and Denise on a Canadian tour this week?
Yeah, so I have no idea why. This seems so random. Like, when was Philippines? Like, how many years ago?
I believe it was 6.
Got it.
Yeah.
Why are they? Is like the Calgary women's show. I'm pretty sure Kirsten McInnes was talking about maybe going to it. Canada is very big, so this is absolutely nowhere near me. Mm-hmm. But I saw like Malcolm tweeted something like, Canada, we're coming to you. And I got very excited because I love me some Malcolm. But
I love Canada.
I love Canada. Jesus. But yeah, I have no idea why or what, but it was some sort of Calgary women's show. No idea.
So surprised because like I had seen like on Reddit a screenshot of like, hey, look, Malcolm and Denise got back together. And I just thought that somebody was like making a joke that there were 2 people that were on a news show that looked like Malcolm and Denise. And then
like
when I
Joe and Julie or something, you know, like
not even Survivor related. I just thought there were 2 people. There was like a taller guy with a beard, and then like a shorter woman with brown hair. And I thought somebody was just making a joke, like, ha ha, look, Malcolm and Denise. And then I was really surprised when they actually were going through and making an appearance. It's so bizarre. Like I can understand why Denise is appearing at what is this, a Calgary women's conference,
But why is
Malcolm a guest at the Calgary Women's Conference?
Because he's beautiful and women love him. Is the only thing I can come up with. I have no idea. You just wanted to hang out with Denise? I don't know.
Malcolm on Twitter is actually saying that he and Denise are starting a mid-90s funk duo and they need name ideas. Do you guys have any name ideas for their funk duo?
Is amazing. Oh my gosh.
Hell no.
Yeah. Chef on Twitter said the Match Singers, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Then this was another one. So I think this was born out of a April Fool's joke where Russell Hand said that he was taking over for Jeff Probst as the host of Survivor. And Russell Hance then put out a Twitter poll to his users. He said, seriously, though, if at Jeff Probst retired and they were going to have a vote on the previous players to host, who would you vote for? If none of them below, name your pick. So the choices were Rob, Cochran, Russell Hance, or Coach.
Which Rob?
Well, he specifies Russell Hance, just in case somebody thought it was going to be Russell Swan.
He really mixed that one up.
And the winner of the poll with 50% of the vote was Rob.
And the general.
Yes. one of Russell's followers, Ethan Michael, said Mariano or Cesternino. And Russell said Mariano, even though Cesternino would be better. Oh, so thank you, Russell. Okay. Thank you.
Wow.
Yes, thank you, Russell, what a guy.
You are a legend of hosting. Nothing else.
That's it. Did you, Jenny, follow on social media that a bunch of the people from the first Survivor season got back together?
What is going on? Like, it was like some weird like backyard campfire, like with like one chair. Like it was very confusing.
Perhaps in anticipation of maybe some sort of Survivor Borneo coverage this summer. Maybe it looks like that there was a mini Survivor reunion. I think it was somebody in the group's birthday of that there was a get together. And it looks like so Richard Hatch, Sonia, Ramona, Gretchen, and Jervis, and then Joel Klug is in some other pictures. So six of the original survivors recently got together.
That party sounds lit.
It was a lit party. And then did you see any of the photos, Jenny, of Richard Hatch posing naked with Sonia, who was fully clothed?
I did see a blurred out version of said photo.
Yes.
Man, they got real wild. What a party.
I really don't understand how this all happened.
I have so many questions. I don't even know where to start.
Again, like, I would understand more if it was happening next year, where it would be the 20-year anniversary of Survivor. But this is but the 19th anniversary of Survivor coming up.
Maybe
I don't see what's so much better about 20 than 19.
Maybe 19 means something in numerology. We'll have to ask Abby Maria.
Yeah. My baseball number. 19 is my baseball number.
There we go.
Yeah.
Did it for you.
Okay. So there you go. Some of the original Survivor cast gathering together. Maybe they just want to talk about the Edge of Extinction.
Do you think they watched Survivor together? This is probably on a weekend, right? I'm assuming they didn't watch Survivor together.
Yeah, what a crew.
I don't know. The photos I saw were just like this like desolate like backyard with like two chairs and like a campfire. And it was like daytime. I just have so many questions about what was going on.
Yeah.
Rob, do you ever get together with like Joanna and Janet Koth and people like that or no?
Not recently. Also, Sonia has like several layers on while Richard Hatch is completely naked.
I mean,
that's par for the course.
Yeah. Sounds about right. No,
I don't know where it was, but it's like it's April. It's not very warm.
A generous blurring also, perhaps, by the Photoshop editors.
This is the Chris Underwood effect, though. Everyone's exaggerating the blurring now. So.
Yes, Yes. Okay. T-Bird Cooper said, good news, got to hang out with my cool At Survivor family tonight. Bad news, I got to rewatch the episode. It's way too much. At Survivor Riri, at I Tweet Davey, at Wendell Hall. Who's Survivor Riri?
Sharia?
Sharia has a Twitter handle that's Survivor Riri?
I don't know. Wendell is everywhere.
Wow.
Wendell is literally everywhere.
Wendell. He seems to be on tour. I mean, I was shocked to find out that he was at the Jessica Johnston wedding. Also,
I saw the photos on Instagram, but when I forgot about it until Dr. Mike was talking about it, and he was like, "Yeah, it was like the healer's tribe," and then Wendell. I was like, "Wendell even know Jessica Johnston?" Like, Wendell is literally he's like the top invite for absolutely every event.
Yeah. I think that Wendell is running for president of Survivor. I think he is. He's made all these campaign stops. I think he's running. I think he's running, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, he was at the reality takeover the other week. He's going to be in Philly. I think you might be right. Like, if we start seeing him making speeches in Iowa or New Hampshire, you know that he's running for president.
I think that he's about to make an announcement. I think maybe in Philadelphia. What a backdrop it would be. Maybe it's karaoke.
There's some. There were some unposted secret pictures of Wendell at the Survivor Borneo reunion.
Got a lot of constituencies.
Russell should have adjusted his poll and added Wendell as one of the options for hosting the show, because he's doing the most for Survivor right now, I would say.
Yeah, he's doing a lot. Okay. All right. Sierra Easton, at Sierra Easton, she was beside herself watching this episode this week. She says, the goal is to make it to the loved ones visit. What? Sierra, she's all about voting her loved ones out of there. She's trying to get rid of loved ones, not bring them in.
Yeah, who cares about having your family there? Even if they were invited, like, let's get rid of them.
Get them out of here. Forget a loved ones visit. Get rid of loved ones at Ponderosa.
Yeah, and like going back to her original season, it sort of reminded me of when Tina was like promising Monica, oh, you'll get to the top five, and she thought that like, oh, it's top five, that sounds so great, and that's a better promise than the family visit. So I mean, you make these promises on Survivor if they're like, I think you really have to commit when you say to someone, oh, you say we're going to go to the end. You don't say we're going to go to the top five. You don't say we're going to get to the family visit. You have to say to these people, we're going to the end together. If not, they might vote you out because they're going to know that it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you're throwing a number at someone and the number is a fixed number that isn't the end, like that is, that says everything. So.
Yeah,
I really don't blame these people.
Yeah. Once upon a time, somebody told me that we were going to go to the top four, and I didn't like that.
Well, they didn't have the fire making, but you still had two more tribal councils to get through at that point. That makes
not
sense.
Not good enough.
Soon it's going to be like, just got to get to the final eight, and then I have this puzzle, that puzzle, and this fire, and I'll be good. Just got to get to the final eight.
Yeah. Okay. Brett LaBelle says, what's the over under on whether or not Fiji Chinese food is better than Fiji pizza? And at the Julia Carter says, Fiji Chinese food way better than Fijian pizza.
It looks pretty good. I got to admit, it actually looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I'll pass on either of them, honestly.
Jordan, did you know that Brett LaBelle is going to be on the next season of The Amazing Race?
I heard. I'm actually going to watch the Amazing Race I'm going to watch The Amazing Race, but if like the Brett LaBelle and Chris Hammonds team and then like the Eliza and Corinne team go early, then I'm done. Okay. I'm watching as long as those two teams are in.
Okay.
I will watch as long as the Survivor and Big Brother people are on it. And I have no idea who any of the Amazing Race people are, but this is a good way to get,
good segue.
People like me,
crossover,
that would never watch The Amazing Race otherwise.
The most ambitious crossover event of our time, the Amazing Race, coming up April 17th. It was just announced. Jenny, that I happened to be talking with my fellow podcaster, Brett LaBelle, the other day, and he was recently in New York City. And he called me and said, I've got a bone to pick with somebody on your staff. I said, I'm very sorry. What happened? And he told me that somebody who is one of my contributors was really had done something to wrong him recently. And I said, I'm so embarrassed, Brett, that somebody who is a contributor to Rob's podcast went out, saw you in real life and did something to upset you. And Jenny, do you happen to guess who Brett LaBelle was upset with?
Honestly, whoever this is has to be a terrible person because Brett LaBelle is like widely known as the nicest guy. Yeah, like if you pissed off Brett LaBelle, it's not like pissing off Reem Daly. Like if you pissed off Brett LaBelle, yes, you messed up big time. So, I mean, I can't even imagine that you would have someone as a contributor.
Neither could I.
Capacity to upset someone like Brett LaBelle. So Who was this terrible person?
He said, you know, I got a real problem with Jordan Kalish.
Whoa.
Went full war dog.
let me explain. I'll explain this.
He said Jordan Kalish stole his beer.
Oh my, that is like the worst thing you could do to Brett LaBelle. What are you thinking, Jordan?
Yeah. So Brett LaBelle, we were at a table. We were standing around a table with some other
Survivor
fans.
The short version of this story, please.
Okay, so Brett LaBelle has two beers. He's drinking both of them, double fisting. I believe it was Wendell or somebody bought him a beer. Okay. He left it on the table.
Sounds like
he
Wendell.
He went away. He went to go take a picture, and he came back, and I had drank. I opened the bottle and I drank some of the beer. I thought it was an abandoned beer. I will say, look, I will read my statement. The allegations are true. I did steal Brett LaBelle's beer. It wasn't out of malice. I thought he left the beer there. I didn't think he wanted it anymore. I mean, I should have probably not assumed that. I was also a couple beers in at this point, so maybe my judgment was off. But Brett LaBelle, as I've told you, the next time I see you, I will buy you a beer.
Okay. All right.
Jordan, you got to be careful with these abandoned drinks. Like, you never know.
It was a sealed bottle.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
Okay. All right, please do not upset the reality stars.
A beer of your choice, any type.
Okay, it's on. All right. And last couple of tweets. Gabby tweeted out, "Me during our season, the Goliaths are so frustrating for not turning on each other yet. Me during Edge of Extinction, Kama is so dumb for turning on each other so soon. Needless to say, I have no idea how to play in the majority because people are going to shite on your decisions either way."
Queen. And
Steven says, I mean, if we're going to be results oriented, the Goliaths pretty clearly should have stuck together to eliminate all the Davids. I mean, did the Goliaths split? I mean, they were kind of Goliath strong, right?
Yeah, they didn't really actually split. So, yeah.
And she says, I totally agree, which is why it's so funny. It was easy for me to preach from the bottom about how the Goliaths should flip, even though I knew that wasn't the right move for them.
Well, I mean, she's so right, though. Like, it's so easy to say when you're on the other end of it, like, you know, you're watching another alliance and being like, break that up. You're at the bottom of it. And then, you know, we're all, you know, the Monday morning quarterbacks sitting at home and watching it happen on TV and being like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. That was stupid. It was exactly what we're saying earlier. Like, you can always find a way to criticize it. So Gabby is right. She's a queen. That's all I have to say. I support everything Gabby does and says. So
yes, okay, all right. Let's before we get into our this week in Survivor History quiz, let me thank one other sponsor today, and those are our friends over at BetOnline.ag. Of course, they are the people behind the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge for March Madness. Jordan Kalish filled out my bracket. Jordan, do you have any guesses on how we did?
Not great.
Me neither,
I know
Rob,
we don't have any more teams left, which is a problem.
Ideally, so let me just get this straight. So ideally, you want when it's the final four, you need to have teams that are still playing in your bracket.
Well, I got one of the final four teams. I had Virginia, but the rest of my teams, I had Duke, UNC, Florida State, they did not pull through.
Okay.
Maybe I shouldn't have picked three teams from the same conference all to make the final four because they all didn't make it.
Rob, yep. I feel like you've learned a lot about putting your trust in Jordan Kalish today.
Yeah, I might as well leave my beer out in front of Jordan Kalish next time.
I might be, if I ever get on like a Survivor fans versus favorite season, there could be all these survivors that I've just wronged in the past on the other tribe, and I'd be screwed.
All right. Just because I'm out of it doesn't mean that you have to be either. Because
are we still beating Shaq? Are we beating Shaq?
No,
still?
Shaq is now beating us, Jordan.
Oh, no. I want it to be Shaq.
Shaq passed us now.
There's a song. That's how I beat Shaq. I want it to beat Shaq.
We're losing to Shaq and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
And we can't come back. We can't because we can't get any more points.
Yes. Yes. I mean, do you know how many injuries to the brain Stone Cold Steve Austin has probably had in his day?
I'm actually going to WrestleMania tonight, though.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Don't piss him off if he's there.
Yeah, don't take his beer. The rattlesnake would hate that.
That's the last thing I would ever do.
Yeah.
Is there an edge of extinction for this bracket tournament? Is there like a separate bracket that we could get back in? I could like get some more teams?
The edge of extinction consolation bracket is called go on to betonline.ag and feel free to get in on all of the action anytime you want, even if you're eliminated in the Podcast One Sportsnet bracket, because they have got a 50% welcome bonus for you when you use the promo code podcast1. Even if you're like me with a busted bracket, the fun continues each week as you'll have a chance to win money in your betonline.ag account. It's the hashtag Sportsnet Bracket Challenge presented by betonline.ag. March Madness is down to the final four. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code podcast1 at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Okay. Jordan, are you ready for this week's edition of the Twitch quiz?
I am. I'm waiting for the Ryan Elder drop.
Twitch.
Okay. Now I'm ready for the Twitch quiz.
That's actually from DJ LaBelle Klein. Yes.
Oh, DJ LaBelle Klein. I'm sorry. I was actually just looking at Ryan Elder's name on Twitter.
Okay.
I'm mad at DJ LaBelle Klein for destroying my wand off once again. But yeah, I am ready for the quiz. Jenny, are you ready for the quiz?
Yes, I am as ready as I could possibly be, which is not very ready, but
okay,
it's fine.
All right. Let me set up the rules here because we're, you know, almost 90 minutes into this and we haven't gotten to the quiz yet. So Jordan has a bunch of categories, four categories in all. Jenny, you'll pick first. You'll get to pick one of the categories that if you think you know the answer without hearing the multiple choices, you can answer directly and earn yourself 2 points. If you are wrong, though, you open it up for your opponent to steal for 1 point. You can hear the multiple choices, but if you are correct, then you will receive 1 point. You also have the opportunity to use any voice-enabled assistant to help you as a lifeline in your journey.
I hear they're very helpful, so that's great.
You have any of these voice-enabled assistants?
I don't use Siri. I have like an iPhone. I don't use Siri, so I don't even know if it's.
It doesn't really matter.
I don't even know if it's activated on my phone. Like I think if I it's yeah, I'm saying Siri right now, and it's not paying attention. So I might as well be lifeline.
Does Siri have a Canadian accent?
I'm sure that there's probably. There's probably some sort of format. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Jordan, what do you have in store for us today?
Good job to saying the rules. I'm happy I didn't have to do it this week. The categories that we have are Not Oolong for This World, The Notorious KVO, Mic Drop, and A Fair Amazon Question.
Oh, wow. A fair.
So, Jenny, Amazon. As a guest, you get to choose first.
Let's can you say them again? Sorry. The second
We have Not Oolong for This World, The Notorious KVO, Mic Drop, and A Fair Amazon Question.
Let's go with Mic Drop.
Okay, so we're gonna go to Survivor Ghost Island. Fear Keeps You Sharp is the name of the episode from April 11th, 2018. That's 1 year ago Thursday. If Chris Noble had correctly played JT's Game Changers idol at the tribal council in which he was voted out of Ghost Island, who would have been sent home with just 2 votes against him or her?
I think I remember this. This is probably going to be, I'm team don't let Rob steal, but I feel pretty confident about this one. I think it was going to be Libby.
Libby Vincheck, Jenny, great job. You start with a 2-pointer there. Really good memory there. Not easy. When I go to the more recent seasons, I usually get a little bit more in the weeds because it was just a year ago. But yeah, Libby Vincheck got 2 votes at that tribal council. And,
not going to get blown out. Perfect. That's all I wanted. The Lipster.
The Lipster, who unfortunately, when she did finally get voted out, she found out Michael Yerger's real age. And Rob, you get to choose the category now.
Okay. Then would that make her a puma?
No. I don't think she's old enough to be a puma.
Okay.
I think that was fine.
Okay. All right. Then I will go with a fair Amazon question.
Of course, Rob.
Okay. A fair Amazon question. We're going to Survivor the Amazon. The episode is called The Chain from April 10th, 2003, 16 years ago Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Rob, you were on the season, but you'll see why this is a fair question. When Alex won the Amazonian Weapons Challenge, he took Jenna along with him to the coffee bar. While enjoying their reward, who did they talk about as being difficult to bond with? I figure this is one that you and everyone else just saw on TV, so I think it's fair.
Okay. Who is difficult to bond with?
Enjoying their reward, who did Alex and Jenna talk about as being difficult to bond with?
Okay. This is just going to be a shot in the dark, so let me hear the multiple choices.
Sure. A, Butch Lockley. B, Christy Smith. C, Dina Bennett. D, Matt Von Ertfelde.
I think that Mateo would be the person that they said was difficult to bond with.
So Mateo is someone who was accused of being creepy. He was, you know, accused of being a different kind of guy and maybe at times difficult to bond with. But it was actually Dina Bennett. This is the episode where she gets voted out. Alex and Jenna are talking about how she doesn't really fit in with their alliance. And it's sort of, I think, the first talk in the episode that Dina might be the one to go. And then when you were actually back with Dina at camp, you guys were talking about potentially blindsiding Alex here. So, yeah, it was
and
Dina
she...
Bennett.
Did the classic Survivor mistake of that pitching a new idea in a group. You want to pitch new ideas in the one-on-one because sometimes there's one person in the group that says, that's not a good idea. And and the second that Alex and Jenna got back, Heidi was already in their ear saying, like, hey, Dean is talking about voting Alex out tonight.
I think and saying it in front of Heidi was probably even worse of a mistake than saying it in front of anybody else.
Miscalculation. I think that Dina thought that the women's strong bond was going to be tighter than it was.
Yeah. And Jenny, do you agree? Fair question.
Yeah. I mean, that was my I was kind of hoping that I would have the opportunity to steal because I think that was fair. I was going to go for Dina. So,
OK.
All right. So it's good that you went for the multiple choice, Rob. Jenny, 2-0 lead. We're going to the next question. We have either Not Oolong for This World or the Notorious KVO.
I'm going for the Notorious KVO.
All right. I think I've used the Notorious KVO as a category name more than any other name because I love writing questions about Kathy.
I like it. She's great.
We're going to Survivor Marquesas, or the Marquesas, I should say. The episode is True Lies from April 11th, 2002, 17 years ago Thursday. Which original ROTU member did Kathy cast a rogue vote for at the merged tribal council in which Boston Rob was voted out?
ROTU member. I want to say it was Zoe.
Zoe Xanadakis is correct. And Jenny, you get it again without needing the multiple choice. You have a big 4-0 lead over Rob, who actually was able to shut out Scott Chernoff this week. The same thing could be happening to you, Rob. If you don't get this question right.
That was last week.
That was that's what I said, right?
This week.
I don't know. This is this week. Last week again, Scott Chernoff. Rob, you need to get this one right. Either a 1-pointer or a 2-pointer here. If not, you are going to be done going into the
Rob,
final round.
Rob, you're not throwing this, right? Like,
we'll see.
So Survivor Palau, Rob, this is Not Oolong for This World. Survivor Palau, Neanderthal Man from April 7th, 2005, 15 years ago today. Which two Karor members defeated Stephanie and Bobby John in the final tribal immunity challenge of Survivor Palau, sending the two remaining Oolongs to tribal council?
Boy, that's a tough question to do without the multiple choice of I let me hear the choices. I have to come up with two people. And
if you get this right, you'll be down by three, which is you are able to come back from a 3-point deficit. So we have A, Tom and Ian, B, Tom and Greg, C, Ian and Kobe, D, Kobe and Greg.
I want to say that Greg was in there. Could you give me the choices one more time?
Sure. A, Tom and Ian. B, Tom and Greg. C, Ian and Kobe. D, Kobe and Greg.
I'll say Tom and Greg.
Tom and Greg. So Greg, you are correct, was participating in this challenge, but Tom actually participated in the reward challenge with Ian in this episode, so he was ineligible to compete. It was Kobe and Greg who defeated Stephanie and Bobby John. So Rob, you don't get any points. It's 4-0.
All right, so we're done here.
You want to do one round of the death match like last week, Rob? So you can maybe save face and get a question right. It won't be for points, but what do you want to do here? You want to go to the death match?
Not particularly.
Right. So you know what? I'll save this for next year.
I'll leave it up to Jenny. Jenny, do you want to hear the death match?
I've talked your ear off, Rob. If you're not feeling it, I'm a people pleaser. If you're happy, I'm good.
Yes, Jenny. did you know the answer to that question?
I honestly, that is one of my weaker seasons. So I was purposely leaving it to the end. I may have gotten the right guess if it was multiple choice, but there was no way I was, going for 2 points on that one.
Okay.
Not an easy question. And inside baseball, the reason I was pushing so hard last week, I really liked the death match that I came up last week. This one I thought was fine, but it wasn't, you know, too overly creative like I thought last week's was. So I am fine saving this for another time. I'll file it away.
I'm fine saying that I swept Rob. So I'll take
congratulations.
It.
Congratulations.
I'm in shock.
Either way, Jenny, you could have said that because it wouldn't have counted for points. It would have just That's been for true. Fun.
But I now I can say for sure that it didn't happen.
So fun. So.
And also, so you fun. Could be the Baltimore Orioles, who are losing 8-0 right now to the Yankees, not 4-0. So, Rob, you're doing better than the Orioles.
Okay. All right. So I have that. All right. So, let me see. I had some voicemails that I felt like that were not ready for even a voicemail show with Dr. Mike, I thought.
Wow. That says something.
Okay. Let me see. Let me just take a look at my file real quick. Here's a voicemail from AJ.
Hi, Rob. This is AJ from Northridge. So on this season, we have a couple of players bestowed the great honor of Probst calling them by their last name in Wentworth and Devins. We also have nicknames being used for the War Dog and the brief flash of Big Wendy on her way getting voted out. So my question for you, is this going to spur the next great Survivor theme? Could we possibly have season 39 centered around first names versus last names versus nicknames? Let me know what you think. Perhaps I'm just overly excited about finally getting the general back on our screen all these years later.
There you go.
Thanks. Oh, the general. Two mentions in one podcast. That's
Rob, how would Mike Francesa react to a voicemail like that?
Okay. All right. Nothing, people have nothing else to do. Yeah. Call up about...
The next call is going to be about should Jason Giambi be on the next season of Survivor?
Okay.
This is one from Jennifer has a question.
Hey, Robin, Dr. Mike, it's Jennifer. I have a concern about this season. It has to do with Mr. Rick Devins and how he says the name Lesu.
Oh my
He's
God,
been calling it the Lesu trial. Lesu. Clearly, that is not the name, right? Am I wrong? Is he now going to start calling the Kama tribe the Kama tribe? Like, what is going on here? Can you please help me out here?
Yeah.
No, the tribal, he says it when he's talking to War Dog, he says it somewhat normally. And if it's normal, it's how everyone else seems to be saying it. He's like, Lesu, and I have not heard anyone else say it that way. It struck me as well, so I'm with Jennifer on this one.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that something happened to him on the edge of extinction?
I'm sure many things happened to him on the edge of the stage. Maybe he picked up some regional dialect from Ream. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe is Ream from the Midwest? Is that where?
Oops. Isn't Ream from Virginia? What's Virginia?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Yeah. That sounds right.
What's that considered? Right.
So maybe they say Oops in Virginia.
Yeah.
Jordan, I wanted to know your take on this clip from the episode. This is Aubrey.
Sneaky, sneaky like Kelly Wentworth.
Does anybody who doesn't listen to the podcast know that Kelly Wentworth says sneaky, sneaky?
I mean, maybe, you know, no, I think if you're enough of a super fan to know that quote, a very specific quote from her original season, I'm pretty sure that, I think she was shouting out the podcast there. I mean, you made shirts, you made sneaky, sneaky shirts.
Yeah. I normally am one to say when people say like, oh, the podcast did this. I don't know. But I feel like that's one that I think we have to take attribution for.
Yeah, I think we did it. Yeah. We got on the show.
Okay.
We made it, guys.
And Jenny, was there anything wrong with the way that Eric says this sentence? It didn't sound right to me.
Let's use our numbers that we so craftily acquired.
What?
Right.
How do you craftily acquire? I don't.
Apparently, Joe winning challenges for you is craftily acquiring numbers.
Yeah. Mm. Like, what? How did you acquire these numbers just by not having to vote people out? Like, unless he's referring to, you know, David and
Devins,
but like they kind of already had the numbers out. I don't know.
Yeah.
If anyone craftily acquired numbers, I would say it was War Dog.
Don't get excited.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Classically good with numbers, the War Dog.
I'm the one that so craftily acquired these numbers, Eric Hafeman.
I love the I want to hear, you know, the War Dog talk to everyone with their full name now, especially now that we know the full name since you went through them on the podcast. So I want next week, I want him to be, you know, saying like, listen, Julia Carter.
You know the death match for this week. I was actually looking into potentially bringing the last name game back of people who've gotten voted out this week in Survivor history, but I realized it does not work for post merge people because everyone has too memorable of a last name. I think it would work well for like a week 2 through 4, where it's not the first boot, but it's one of those potentially forgettable like 2nd through 4th. Not that every 2nd through 4th boot is forgettable, but some of them are.
All right, keep us posted on that brilliant idea, Jordan Kalish.
Next season, I will.
Good job winning the immunity challenge this week, Aurora McCreary.
I'm so into this.
Yeah. He's like a vice principal.
Oops.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Jenny, anything else you want to talk about from this week in Survivor or life?
You know what? I feel like I got to talk about all the things I wanted to talk about. I've been looking, you know, I've been always wanting to get on here and talk about an episode with you. So, really enjoyed it. And Jordan, you're great too. You're okay.
One of my favorite wand offers, Jenny and Colin, but great partnership. Colin.
Yes.
Thank you.
Now, Jenny, do you have a pick for the winner of the season? I think this is a fascinating question.
Oh my goodness. I feel like this has been the hardest season to have a pick for. I definitely early game saw, aside from the returnees, I really saw something in Rick. And then when he got voted out where he did, I was like, he's definitely coming back from Edge of Extinction, because I just felt like the edit, you know, his story wasn't done and I didn't think it was an Edge of Extinction story. But now he's really taken a turn, so I'm not feeling his chances to win as much anymore. I think that I'm in on Victoria.
Victoria?
Yeah.
I could see it.
Yeah.
Before the season started, I mean, I was pretty sold on the fact that just because the returning players have had such a good track record in seasons like this before where it's mixed, I thought a returning player was going to win. I think if a returning player wins now, I really only think that David is potentially in the running, because I think Aubrey, if she comes back, would be out of the game too long. I think the same thing with Joe. And also, I just don't think Joe's gotten enough of an edit. And even though I'm not really on board with like the Wentworth as a villain thing that some people are talking about on social media, I don't think she's necessarily gotten the most positive edit, especially with like that splice clip, which didn't make her look great. Before the season started, the three returners that I was really impressed with from First One Out and from their exit press were Victoria, Julie, and Aurora. And I think Aurora has not been shown enough, but I really think it's going to be between Victoria and Julie, and I've kind of gone back and forth with who I think is in the number one spot. I mean, right now, numbers wise, I think, you know, Julie, the vote went against her, but it's final 12. Julie could get the numbers back, so I think one of those women is going to end up winning the season.
Okay. I just really feel like we've never, well, not never, but like, I just think that Victoria is such a compelling character. She's like a young badass. She saves the snark for the confessionals. She's not, you know, she seems to be good with people. I would just love to see someone like her win. So,
all right. We'll see. I think I probably would lean Julie among these choices, but I think that it's definitely interesting. I'm not counting out David Wright or Kelly Wentworth either.
Yeah, I think either one of them could win. I think David is more likely than Kelly at this point.
Okay. All right. We will see as we continue onward here into episode number 9 of The Edge of Extinction coming up this week. I am going to be joined on the podcast this week by the great T-Bird Cooper, ooh, your friend and mine, talking with T-Bird this week. I have some fun stuff planned coming up with T-Bird on Thursday. And then on this week's feedback show, I'm also very excited that my great friend Eric Stein will be joining us to talk about everything going on in Survivor as we hear from America's favorite player, Eric Stein, coming up this weekend on the podcast. And then, of course, tomorrow we have the Wiggle Room coming up, and we will get into the wand off. And this is going to be a great wand off this week. I have a feeling.
Honestly,
Jenny, did you submit anything this week?
No, you know, I haven't submitted anything. Take a little bit of time off. I was more focused on doing this podcast. And but what a great episode. I feel like there's so much material in this one. So I'm looking forward to seeing what all of the other wand-off geniuses have to offer this week.
Okay. So be on the lookout for that. Of course, all of this podcasting made possible by the wonderful patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. For more information on everything that we're doing behind the scenes of Rob Has a Podcast, become part of our Patreon community, head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Of course, if you want to follow Jenny on the social media, she is at Jenny Autumn on Twitter. Is that the same on Insta?
It is. I try to keep my my social media brand consistent. So yeah, Jenny Autumn on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay. You two are a stan of the King Cake Baby.
I am the reason you guys stan the King Cake Baby. I submitted that idea. I am so big on the King Cake Baby, and anyone who is not feeling that is officially Opes. So,
oh yes, yes. That's what we say to people who do not stan the King Kong Baby. You are Yeah. Or Opes to us.
Yes. Yeah,
and Jenny, who was the first survivor you followed on Twitter?
I was going to say, I wasn't sure if you're going to ask. I feel like I looked at this like a long time ago when you started asking people before I even knew I was going to be on this podcast, because I was very curious. I'm not 100% sure if I remember this correctly, but I want to say it was Cochran.
Cochran was the first non-Big Brother survivor contestant you followed. It was actually Hayden Moss. I have a feeling based on the people that you followed him around, I think you followed him more because of Big Brother. So I'll give you a half point for Cochran.
Throw it in the fire.
I was like a bit of a live feeder during Big Brother 12. I had like a separate Twitter account for live feeds.
Prepare you for Big Brother Canada 7?
Yes. What a great preparation that was.
Yes. It's like it's like 2011 all over again.
Yes. Wow. What a
2010.
What a year to relive. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It was a great year for me. Love 2010.
That was okay for me. I was actually recently discussing ranking like the versions of me of the last 10 years. I don't know if I would.
Put them in Brant Steele. Get Mike Bloom.
No, someone actually on Twitter suggested
put them in the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Of course, Robin Akiva need a podcast coming as well this weekend. Akiva Winokur and I watched season 3, episode 7 of Beverly Hills 90210. And so we'll see what was happening back in West Beverly High School on the first day of senior year for the Beverly Hills 90210 gang. And then we're cleaning out the wheel waiting room this week. So it's a jam-packed episode of Robin Akiva need a podcast, Dirty 30 edition, episode number 30 of Robin Akiva need a podcast, also coming this weekend. So a lot of stuff for you guys.
I have a feeling my idea, which was the Robin Akiva airing of the grievances, is probably going to get cleaned out of the waiting room. Or if it's not, if it
I don't even think it was in the waiting room.
I thought it was. I think it was in the waiting room. I think you guys put it.
Check the rejected ideas tab.
Maybe that's where it is. But no, you guys did say if the idea was completely changed, there was a chance that it would get on, but it wouldn't be my airing of the grievances idea anymore.
Oh wait, airing of the grievances? Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I would love to do that idea for a podcast.
Yeah,
I mean, I would definitely not want to do that idea for a podcast.
What would you rather do? Would you rather do airing of the grievances, or you and Akiva cook a meal for your family and your family criticize it?
I would rather do cooking a meal.
Wow. So airing the grievances is my worst RAA NAP idea.
Well, we're so in the weeds right now. Well, what is the airing of the grievances idea?
I think
I'm airing my grievances with Akiva.
You bring two listeners on who have beef, and they air their beef with each other.
That is,
well, I have suggestions.
Yeah. Okay. Well, say that for the millennial judge. That's millennial judge stuff. Okay. All right. Jenny, anything else?
No, I've taken enough of your time today.
Thank you all so much for listening to this insane podcast. We'll be back with...
Congratulations on your win. Big win.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Wiggle room to come, and be on the lookout for Renap 30 later this weekend. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Special thanks to our friends over at True Car for sponsoring this episode of Rob as a Podcast. Every car comes with its share of stories, that ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, that luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you save by riding your bike all summer long. And while you can't put a price tag on your stories now with True Car, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. Just go to True Car and simply enter the license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof. Watch as they're going to bump up your car's value. High mileage, you already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it's going to ding your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or to trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True cash offer not available in all areas.